Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
Welcome to All Bodies on Bikes, the podcast, where all bodies are good bodies, all bikes are good bikes, and all rides should be celebrated.
All Bodies on Bikes is a movement to create and foster a size-inclusive bike community. So join your hosts. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Marley.
As we explore the complexities of the biking world, help us break down barriers and create the world that we want to see. And don't forget that All Bodies really means all bodies, not just larger bodies, but bodies of all sizes, ages, races, abilities, genders, sexualities, and beyond.
Come along for the ride. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the All Bodies on Bikes podcast. We have a really exciting episode today, primarily because these women that we're talking to are absolutely incredible and just did such a remarkable ride that I can't wait to tell you all about. So we're just going to dive right in. So Ozark Gravel Doom. This race calls itself a beautifully evil bikepacking event in the South. With two distance options at 400 miles and 196 miles, this event doesn't have any podiums or prize money and is entirely self-supported. The 2024 edition took place this past weekend, with the fastest male finisher of the 400-mile Doom category finishing in 45 hours, 42 minutes, and the fastest woman coming in at 2 days... That doesn't make sense. Yeah, it does. 2 days, 4 hours, and 15 minutes. So a couple hours more than the male finisher. I don't have any information on any non-binary finishers, but if we get that info, we will add that into it. And I apologize for that. Today, we're catching up with three incredible women who completed the Despair Distance, which is 196 miles, Janine Fitzgerald, Diana Gibson, and Jennifer Swartout. Tune in as we hear about their inspiration for riding this event, the challenges and triumphs, and why at 50 years old, they feel stronger than ever. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I will read all of your individual bios real quickly as well, so we know who we're talking to. So Janine Fitzgerald has dedicated over three decades to outdoor exploration and has been a prominent figure in the bike industry since 2002. She's best known for her pioneering spirit as the co-founder of Pedal Kids USA, formerly known as Buddy Pegs, and is particularly passionate about encouraging women to join her on rides. There's a little spoiler alert here, a little foreshadowing. Always ready to support and push them towards embracing challenging adventures. Her belief in the empowering nature of cycling and outdoor activities is encapsulated in her mantra, "It's easier than parenting," highlighting the simplicity she finds in these pursuits compared to the complexities of raising children. Up next, we've got Jennifer Swartout. Jennifer is the Associate Vice President for General Education at Northwest Arkansas Community College and has lived in Northwest Arkansas for 5 years. She's always had a bike, but she started taking cycling, quote, seriously, around 20 years ago, riding mountain bikes and then adding other disciplines in along the way. She lives in Bella Vista with her terrier mix Callie, and she currently volunteers as a ride leader for FEMS Gravel and is an Amazium board member. We'll have to ask about what FEMS Gravel is because I'm very curious. And then finally, we've got Diana Gibson. Last but not least, Diana is a mom with three kids, including twins, and a demanding full-time job. Her favorite thing is an all-day or multi-day adventure in the mountains. She's trying to figure out how to keep exploring and having fun while getting older and being a fully functioning adult. Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you all for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Marley.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's start out with, I guess, kind of an easy softball question. What inspired you to sign up for Ozark Gravel Doom?
Diana made me do it.
Is that true, Diana?
Kind of, yeah. You know, as I've been getting older, I've been trying to think of like adventures and events that still like inspire me and get me a little scared. And so there were two this year that I was really focused on that I kind of didn't know whether I could finish. One was the Mid-South Double, which was a few weeks ago.
Did you finish that?
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, and I actually trained for that one.
Say that one more time. You did what with that one?
I actually trained for that one. So I had run some marathons before, but I'd never run more than that. And so the thought of doing 50K of running on trails really scared me, followed by like a 100-mile gravel ride. So I trained for that, and then I had heard about Doom, and it definitely sounded scary, but I thought that, you know, maybe if I showed up and kind of gave it a shot, it would be fun.
It was fun.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Now that it's over, was it fun, objectively?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And I want to say I really relate to what Diana said, that, you know, I joke that I needed a winter project, but I have a tendency as well to say like, well, what I think we're probably all very goal oriented. I'm just going to venture here a thought, and I wanted to pick something that was beyond my usual comfort zone, and this definitely was. So
yeah.
And it was definitely fun.
So I did some research, and it looks like, so you guys did the despair distance, which was 196 miles. And please correct me if I have this wrong, but 2 days, 10 hours and 1 minute. Is that correct?
Yes.
Have you ever done anything of this? I don't know. I don't want to say level necessarily, but taken on something of this, adventure level.
That, it's funny because Janine's nodding. I definitely hadn't. I mean, I had done bikepacking, you know, but more on a social thing. And I had done lots of gravel races and mountain bike races, and some of them were quite long. But I've never tried to put the two together, and I've never done a self-supported ride or race.
Mm.
But yeah. I suspect Diana and Janine probably have some experience that's a little different with this stuff.
Yeah, Janine, let's hear about your experience.
Yeah, you know, living in the Mountain West, I've had bikepacking experiences. Maybe, you know, there used to be a race from Montana to where I live in Victor, Idaho. And that was a multi-day self-supported, probably about 400. And then have done
400 miles.
That was 400 miles, 350, wow. 400. But there's also the San Juan hut trip. And that's a multi-day. You're staying in huts at night. So definitely multi-day, pretty self-supported adventures. I would say this one was different in the sense that, I guess, having a loaded bike and tossing in all of that, that single track, that 20 miles of single track, was definitely a challenge. And then on top of it, like 18% gradient gravel climbs. In the Mountain West, you climb forever seemingly, but I don't hit those types of pitches.
Yeah, it's a different kind of climbing out there.
It's different. So it definitely felt physically more of a challenge. And then also, as being older, being 50, you know, my hands on a drop bar, you know, bike on single track over rock gardens, like, and the hands hurting. It definitely physically felt way more demanding than anything I've ever done in the past. So it was intense.
Yeah. And I want to dig into the age in just a second. But Diana, have you ever taken on anything like this before?
Yeah, no, not really. I've done a lot of backpacking trips and hiking. I grew up backpacking with my dad and my family. And I've done a lot of bike racing, but I'd never really put the two together before. The other thing for me is that although I've done long bike rides, I was trying to think about when I've ever done 27,000 feet of climbing.
Wow. We could have pedaled to the top of Everest. We could have gone to the top of Everest by bike.
I'm not sure I've done that ever, even in my 20s, much less on like a fully loaded, heavy bike, mountain bike, basically. So, in retrospect, I'm not sure what I was thinking.
I think honestly, like, it speaks to something. I think it speaks to both our preparation physically and athletically, that we were actually more prepared for this and healthier and stronger than we realized. And also the sort of the mental ability, right? And a lot of that, I think, had to do with both our individual personalities, you know, that we were probably not going to give up, although I tried several times and they wouldn't let me. But, you know, but that also that we were kind of working together to, you know, so when you hit those moments, when I had some dark moments, and I had two people with me that were like, nope, sorry, not going to let you quit. You're fine. Everything's fine. You know, and, you know,
eat a snack. You're fine.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of that, especially the last day.
Yeah. So did you guys all plan to ride together? It sounds like Janine and Diana planned to ride together, or at least take on the adventure together. How did you all three come together? At what mile did that happen?
It's right before Buffalo Headwaters School. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't remember what mile that was.
I forget the mile. You were there helping Matt. And
was it fairly early on?
I'm not super... 28.
Yeah.
We'd sort of all like started differently, and the two of you had started together. And there's actually a fourth woman from Northwest Arkansas that I had done a lot of training with and deserves recognition, Laura Shields.
Yeah.
It's not 50. Is an incredible athlete in her own right and just absolutely crushed this race. But I had been doing, I'd hoped to keep up with her and kind of thought I may not be able to, and I was right. And so when I saw Diana and Janine, I was really happy.
I can imagine this would have been a totally different experience if you were out there on your own.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it might have even been a different outcome. So
speaking of, there is still somebody out on the course right now because there is no time cutoff.
I know. So, and that storm the other night, I was thinking about those folks that were still out there.
Oh, I think their name is Kendall. So Kendall, if you ever hear this, we are rooting for you.
Yes.
Last time we checked, she was at Oak and had about 115 miles left to go. So probably another 2 days at the pace she's going. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the fact that you are all either just turned 50 or about to turn 50. What is the significance of that?
I mean, I would say for me that I feel personally that I'm in a space right now that I could spend more time to focus on my fitness and getting ready for this. You know, it's been years of adventures from backcountry skiing to, like Diana, backpacking, that I feel like I just, that mental, like being ready mentally is something that I feel really, I really appreciate that I have, because it's what allows me to kind of dive into these adventures and feel excited about it. It's very rarely that you'll see me like get sad when I'm out having an adventure, because I'm like, I'm on an adventure.
Yeah.
Except for if lightning and a storm comes in, I panic. I have this visceral reaction to like storms like that. And so you might see me lose my mind, get sad. Or if it's super hot, I don't love it. I have to really dig deep to stay positive. But so I feel like as I get older, that mental piece becomes stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. It's just the challenge becomes the physical part. And so, which was interesting, Jen, for you, because you were so strong physically. I was so impressed with you, and I think that with if some of those mental pieces, that mental toughness piece, you know, as you grow with that from more adventures like this, I think that you would could have been right up there with Laura for sure. So
honestly, that I'll get all emotional. That means so much coming from you. And I mean, you both are such incredible athletes and adventurers. And like, you know, I think I'm in like this midlife space, you know, where lots changed in my life in the last 5 years. And so a friend asked me, you know, is this an exorcism? You know, like, why would you choose this? And I really approached it with a lot of joy and surprise. Like, you know, I am shocked that my body is doing what it's doing right now for a lot of reasons. And it's so exciting because I think we have this narrative that our bodies are only going to decline, right? And those injuries are real. Like, you know, if you're an endurance athlete, you haven't gotten to this space probably without, you know, you've got arthritis in your hands or your feet or something like that. And I do have some of that, but I have been absolutely shocked at how resilient my body has been, particularly, I'm sure it's because I was so scared when I signed up for this race. I was like 30% excited and 70% terrified. That was like November when I signed up. And then by the time I got to the start line, it was kind of flipped, you know, like I was still pretty nervous, but I was mostly excited. And I knew in order to finish, to have a chance of finishing, that I would have to be really methodical about this, which is not, frankly, my wheelhouse. And so I put in a really, you know, specific plan, thinking like, well, at least I'll show up at the start line having done everything I can possibly do to be physically ready. The other prongs were like the outdoor stuff, like orienteering or, you know, just and just being comfortable in a remote place. I had no, and I knew it would be remote, but I had no idea it would be that remote. And so I think those are the pieces that are so new to me, you know, like, again, I've done some camping and bikepacking and stuff, but this was really a whole other level. So ignorance was, I think, Diana, you said ignorance was on your side once to me, like about this race. And that's definitely, it was helpful that I didn't really know all of what I was getting into. So.
Yeah. Jen, do you think the Jen from 5 or 10 years ago could have done what you just did?
No,
no,
not at all.
Yeah. What about you, Diana? What does it mean to be 50 or when is your birthday? Are you already 50?
Yeah. No, my birthday's my birthday's in June, so I am almost 50, and I've definitely had that kind of at the top of my mind. And, you know, for me, I would say just because I do have 3 kids, I have a job, I have a lot of responsibilities, I don't have a ton of time to train. And so I am getting slower, and that's been actually kind of hard in a lot of ways for me. So it's meant like sometimes I'll do the short version of the event in terms of like always doing the long version in the past and, you know, just taking it a little bit easier on myself. But on the plus side, I know lots of older people say this, but I've stopped caring about what people think as much too.
Absolutely.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's been really liberating. So I'm kind of okay with it. And I'm a lot less scared of failure now than I was when I'm younger. I just really don't care now, and I maybe have more of a sense of urgency too. Like, I'm definitely not getting younger and I'm not getting faster, so if I'm inclined to do something or try something, like, why not do it now?
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
You're being quite humble. She's
yes.
She's being very humble. She's you're just like you know, watching you do the double and coming in from each thing with like this huge smile and not at all, seemingly not even in the spirit world, just like, okay, I know I gotta rest, I gotta get ready for tomorrow. Like, you know, so sure, I would say I agree with you that I think the attitudes that we have now going into events are different. It's not as much that fear or feeling like we have to prove something, but surely, you know, Diana was, you know, I felt like even just this weekend, just having that sense of like, Jen, wouldn't you say like that rock?
Yeah. You know, leadership really. Yes. Both of you. You know, I kept thinking about what incredible leaders you both, I mean, I already knew that because of the Femmes Gravel work and other things that you both do in the community. I know the jobs you do, you know, more or less. And so it doesn't surprise me that those elements came out on, you know, on the road, the trail, in our trip this weekend. But, you know, I mean, there's a real leadership there on both of your parts. So that was really something to be part of and be the beneficiary of, frankly. So.
Well, it sounds like you all worked really well as a team, which is so cool.
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to say about, like, you know, I just remembered something, and that was, you know, like the last couple of years I've really been focused on, like, I'm not like someone that makes New Year's resolutions or whatever, you know, but I remember thinking to myself at some point in the last couple of years that I wanted to start saying yes to things that I would normally like instinctually say no to, you know, even stuff that I wanted to do because I didn't want to fail, or I was afraid I'd get hurt or something bad would happen or something like that. And I definitely, you know, I agree with Diana that this is, I think, a time in our lives where we're just really starting to say, like, well, what do we want? You know, mm-hmm. what do I want to do in my life? And, you know, outside of what everybody else might want, or, you know, and I think that's particularly challenging when you're raising a family. So I really admire that Janine and Diana, you know, in their incredibly busy lives, you know, have committed to events like this over and over again and other, you know, community roles. So these are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've had the pleasure of riding with Diana and one of your kids for a number of events, which has been really fun.
Those kids are amazing.
Yeah. All my kids ride, and we've tried to kind of be a part of mentoring kids having adventures, and especially girls and young women. And part of that is because when I was in my 20s and 30s, I rode with a group of women on the road mostly for a while. But there were a bunch of 50 and 60 year old women in that group, kind of women of all ages, you know, from 20s to 60s. And I remember thinking they were so old and strong then, but I really looked up to them. And now it's just interesting being in that position now. And I do realize that, like, in some ways people are watching us and mm-hmm. kind of looking to us for strength and inspiration too, which has been an interesting feeling.
Yeah, I think folks are really inspired by all three of you. I want to touch briefly on Femmes Gravel, because I think that's a huge movement that's happening here in Northwest Arkansas. And I think Janine, you're involved in leadership. Same with mm-hmm. you, Jen. I think Diana, you are also. Tell us about it and how that maybe helped you prepare for this event.
Well, it's an amazing event. You know, this will be our fourth year. My first year, I would say, was my first winter. Maybe I got into here, and my son was telling me, "Mom, you need to have more girl time," because I was definitely struggling a little getting into Arkansas, living from the Tetons, leaving behind a lot of, like, you know, friends, forever friends. And so he knew that I always loved having these female adventures, and, you know, just I love it. I love the history of adventures that I've had just with women. It's a game changer. It's my sanity. And so at the same time, there was this, I think it might've been an Instagram post or something, about this group of ladies starting to ride gravel. And the idea was to do a century on Mother's Day weekend. And that's kind of how it all started, right? With all of us. And, starting to ride every weekend. And I would say in the 4 years, it's just grown. This year is, what do we have, like 50 or 60 women showing up. Oh, and it's a great event. You know, it's not necessarily an intro to gravel riding. And I would love to see that somebody pick up that realm. There's only so many things, you know, people can do. So it definitely is, for folks who are comfortable-ish gravel riding, but they want to do a century. So how do we get there? And so without a doubt, it definitely helps with this training, because every weekend we're working on it and raising our miles up. So, and then other activities are happening during the week as part of this FEMS group, and, you know, education, from changing a tire to, you know, nutrition. Yeah. I mean, that's huge, right?
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that because I want to know how you all handled that out on the course.
But yeah. So FEMS, it's great. It's awesome. If anyone's listening and they do gravel ride and they feel somewhat comfortable on a gravel bike and at least feel, you know, ride 30 miles and feel okay, then they should definitely think about starting with us next year. It's awesome.
Yeah. And I travel far too much, to do it on the regular, but I've gotten to attend a couple of rides and they are really well done. And it's, they teach people how to ride in a group and how to pace line and so many important skills if you want to be efficient on your bicycle.
I feel like we should acknowledge, you know, the co-founders. That's Heidi Nelson and Amy Ross. And, you know, they're pretty sure Amy's around our age and Heidi's probably in her 40s as well. So I think, again, with the theme of midlife, you know, athletic pursuits, I mean, they're two of the also very talented athletes and community leaders. So grateful to have been a beneficiary of their.
They might be mad at us for aging them.
Totally. Friends.
I'm not sure they're as old as
Sorry.
I don't think they're. Who's as old as. There's no one as old as we are.
No one's as old as
you guys are ancient.
The oldest, of all the groups.
Right? We're the oldest of everyone.
Sorry. Actually, that's a really good question. Do you know, were you the oldest folks at the event?
No, there was a guy who turned 50. There was a guy we were riding with whose birthday was the day we all rode in. He was 50 from British Columbia.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Actually, I don't think they listed anyone's ages, did they? Which was fine. They did?
Yeah.
They really
you can see
the
on
oldest.
Track leaders, I think.
Yeah.
You know what? We did keep seeing people pass and be like, yeah, but they're like under 30. That's why they're not sleeping.
Yeah. It's like 22.
Well, let's talk about the logistics of this a little bit. So you were out there 2 days, 10 hours and 1 minute. I got some rapid fire questions and then we'll get the details. Did you sleep?
Yes.
Okay. Camped. Tell me about that.
We camped every night.
Okay.
Both nights.
Both nights.
Yeah. Okay, this seems a lot more approachable. I often feel like I hear about these people who do these 200, 400 mile without sleeping, you know, without stopping, and it seems literally impossible. So tell me your strategy. You know, how many hours of sleep did you get a night? How often were you refueling? Are there places to refuel out there? Are you literally carrying all your food for 200 miles?
I carried a lot. I think maybe each of us had a slightly different strategy, but you have to be prepared, you know, to really fuel up to 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day, you know, and like I said, we should probably speak individually about planning, but like, you know, for me, I was really afraid of not being able to reach the resupply spots. And the first day, for instance, if we were going to do 60 or 70 miles in one day, there was no resupply, you know? And so, you know, I'm trying to think if there there was a water, you know, I mean, but you really had to be prepared to carry or have access to water and fuel and maybe the two of you can add to that.
Did you take water filters and just filter from streams?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And we were able to fill up from locations as well that were listed that, you know, the race organizer, Andrew, you know, gave certain cues that we knew where we'd find some water. And then we knew where there would be gas stations and food stops. But in between, you know, you needed to have your snacks and have what worked. And, you know, back to nutrition, you know, for me personally, I can't do the, I've struggled always with the nutritional drinks, the liquid fuel makes my stomach rot. And I don't like that feeling. So I, you know, Bobo bars, I'm a vegan. Bobo bars are the bomb. I eat those. And then some of those stores we stopped at had sandwiches and bread and I would buy I found Frito-Lay bean dip. Yes. It is
I
vegan.
I didn't know that was vegan. Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other nasty chemicals in it, I'm sure. But I just bought the canister and like gave it to the person. It's like, can you slap that on some bread with some lettuce and pickles and mustard? And boom, make a couple of them, take one with you, eat one right there. So you just, for me, my strategy was just try to get as much real food in me. And then I can do electrolyte drinks, like the noon tablets. I've figured out don't make me yucky and it's still working. I haven't had an issue. And so through rule of threes, through everything else. So I'm like, not, even though like Diana, right. We were like, oh God, I don't want to eat another Bobo bar, but I'm like, eat the Bobo bar. Cause it works.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And Diana, I'm going to come to you in just a second. But when people ask me about, you know, what do you eat on those gravel days? And it's like, it doesn't really matter as long as it works for you. Everybody's yes. digestion is different. You just got to get those calories in. So mm-hmm. I love that you made a Frito bean dip sandwich. Like,
yeah, so smart. Good. So I kind of want one now and I'm not even riding.
And Diana, what was your nutrition strategy out there? What did you subsist on?
Well, I brought kind of a variety of like normal ride food and then real food and also freeze dried meals for dinners in the evenings. We came pretty fully prepared for camping. So we had like tent, stove. Coffee is also non-negotiable for me. So we had freeze dried coffee for the mornings. And but I think that was one of the real challenges of this route for beginners, especially, was just, you know, essentially 90 miles of no food resupply the first day. And then the race organizer, Andrew, had warned us on Sunday that potentially nothing was going to be open also because of Easter. So you're really out there with potentially, you know, no calories. There was lots of water because it's been a wet spring and mm-hmm. we were filtering. But I mean, other than that, you really had to be self-reliant during this one.
I was thinking about this the last couple of days. I think the three of us did an excellent job of staying fueled, staying hydrated. I mean, we really, you know, off and on had, you know, moments where we were, like I said, in a calorie deficit, someone's getting toward that bonking point, right? We only had a couple of those. And that was really on the last day when I think we really did start, each of us started in a calorie deficit, just because your system just keeps going, right?
Yeah. But
we were very intentional, I think, and very smart about our eating and drinking. And I mm-hmm. think it showed in in the way we were able to finish. So.
Yeah. And I think it shows, we were talking about this before the show, in your recovery. Yeah. It sounds like recovery for each of you is besides understandably being tired, but it seems like it's going okay. I guess, you know.
I'm still eating nonstop though. I've yeah. been eating nonstop. Yeah.
That's and that makes fun. Sense. You just I mean, rode your bike for
no
a very long time.
Yeah. You needed more bean, Frito bean sandwiches.
I'm going to try the bean sandwich later.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to hear about your bike setup. So Janine, you mentioned drop bars. I think I've seen some photos. Some of you were on mountain bikes. I would love to hear about your bike setup and if you would change anything for next time. So Jen, let's start with you. What were you riding and how did it work out?
A Specialized Fuse. And that's a hardtail geared mountain bike and mountain bike gearing. So for me, that worked. I mean, I think, and I've thought a lot about this because I love riding single track on my gravel bike, drop bar, all that, you know. But I think this worked great for me for my first trip like this. And, you know, there are pros and cons. It wasn't a super light bike and it was packed, you know, pretty heavy. But I think the flat bars helped me. I think I had a fit that I think that was really important. And I was super comfortable really the whole time. But again, another surprise. I think I expected other problems to pop up there. And I think the fit helped. And I think the suspension. So Diane, I think you were the only one, you didn't have a suspension fork, right?
I did not, despite being warned by the race organizer, Andrew.
This is how tough she is.
So it's incredible.
I don't need a suspension fork. We need that. I mean.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was the best decision. That is probably the one thing I would have changed. I have a Salsa Fargo that's titanium that I basically bought specifically to get ready for this event used from someone, and it came fully rigid and I just wasn't really prepared to put a new fork on it or change the gearing or anything. But I do think that having a little suspension, even if it made things a little heavier, would have been well worth it. And I would have probably cried a lot less in the single track section on the first day.
But you rode it like a beast. I mean,
I've heard that single track was really intense.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I think about almost 40% of the field scratched, and most people scratched after that first day of single track, because it was just so brutal that kind of getting your head around two more days was really, or another, 100 miles after that was pretty tough, 120 miles after that.
Yeah, wow, a 40% scratch rate, that's a lot.
It was huge. Yeah. I mean, I think you had the people... Well, the folks who were looking to, you know, really go and race it, you know, and went light and didn't have all the things, they realized that took a while to get through all that. And all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh,
yeah,
this is not maybe going to work out. And I think the bike choice, I would say was personally for me was probably the bigger thing. I have the same bike. I have a Salsa Fargo. I love that bike. I've ridden it. Mine's from like 2014, and had to, you know, Frankenstein it back to life a little bit, but I did put a suspension fork on the front of it, and that was huge. But I went with drop bars because that's what it comes with, because I have a lot of hand stuff and carpal tunnel, and that, you know, drop bars give me more hand positioning. I do struggle a little bit more with my mountain bike. But in hindsight, I would have changed it, and I would have gone with flat bars, just with all that technical descending and single track being in the drops is just, it's hard in the neck. It was hard. So I would have changed that, but I felt for my Fargo, I loved, you know, it's essentially a mountain bike. The Fargo they used to make a bike called the El Mariachi Salsa, and it's essentially an El Mariachi with drop bars. And so I thought the gearing was awesome for climbing. It would have run out on more flats, but that really wasn't much of a problem on this ride. So I never felt like I ran out of gearing on the high end. And so,
27,000 feet of climbing. That is a lot of climbing.
Yeah, but they're heavy.
Laura met us at the finish line and said, guys, tell me if I got this right, but she said, so I think there were 9 women who signed up for Despair. And she said Sunday when we got there that none of the women had scratched.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. And honestly, like, not surprising.
You don't say.
Yeah.
And not surprising at all. Of, like, you two, I'm like, you know what? They've had children. They've been through childbirth. This is fine, you know?
Like... Yeah. Well, that kind of goes to my next question. So, Janine, I know your mantra is this is easier than childbirth.
Well, easier than parenting.
Childbirth
was easier than parenting.
So, you know, is that something that you remind yourself of during the ride? And then for Jen and Diana, did you have any mantras you said to yourself to keep yourself going?
I think I just really focused on what was my self-talk, you know, and I kept having to, and this was really helpful for me, just assess the facts on the ground. How is my body? Do I have all the things I need? Do I have water? Do I have food? So my challenge, frankly, was just sort of periodic anxiety, you know, that I was going to die in the woods somehow. I mean, you know, like, I'm a suburban girl, right? I'm from suburban Detroit. I didn't grow up anywhere. I mean, outdoors, we played outdoors, but there was just nothing. There were no family trips out to do wilderness camping. I literally didn't know anybody who did anything like that, you know, any time in my childhood. And so, you know, here I am 50 years old, kind of, you know, exploring that stuff. And I was nervous about it. You know, I mean, I think when you grow up in a place where there is no, like, isolation is bad, right? If you end up in a place where there's not a lot of people or a lot going around, that's dangerous, right? And so for me to kind of get to know the woods and the wilderness as emptiness is safe has been a real game changer. And like, I just had to, like I said, keep thinking about, like, what are the facts on the ground? You know, do I feel okay? I've got these two people with me, you know, I've got a tracker. And honestly, like, for most of those miles, and this is what I think is remarkable, I really was in this beautiful state of flow most of the time, even though there were really hard climbs and stuff. I was mostly just in my head and kind of happy because I was pedaling. So, you know, there definitely, that wasn't all the miles. You know, some of the miles were like, I don't know if I can do any more miles, right? On that last day, that was the last few hours of the last day were really rough. But for the most part, I just kind of focused on thinking about what was going right.
I love that.
We didn't have any tire slashes or anything. We had basically zero mechanicals, and Diana's going to have to talk about her brakes in the last few miles of the trip because she burned out her brakes. But
oh, wow.
We really, it's like there was no reason not to keep going because it was all going really well.
Yeah. Weather was perfect, everything.
Yes. Diana, what happened to your brakes?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can, yeah. So I'll talk about my kind of coping mechanisms first, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
So I had some pretty low moments, Jen, and Janine can attest on the final day, a little bit of bonking, definitely not enough dinner the night before. And then just some really serious chafing. I only brought one chamois for the whole trip. And in retrospect, I should have brought another one with a completely different seam pattern too, just to shift things up. But I was in a lot of pain. And when that happens, actually, and I have to go really deep, I just end up counting. So there were all these steep hike-a-bike sections where we were just pushing our bikes up like 20% grade. And I was just counting steps, like count the next 5 steps, count the next 10 steps. And same with like the epic hill that we had like a few miles before the finish.
I've heard about this hill.
Probably just like counting pedal strokes.
Yeah. Murray Hill. Yeah.
Murray Hill. Andrew, for putting that on this.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And then wait, what am I supposed to be saying now?
Oh, what happened to your brakes?
Oh, what happened to my brakes? So I did buy this used bike, and so I didn't put new brake pads on it, and I probably should have, but I think it, you know, things got just so gnarly in there with all of the stream crossings we went through. We probably did like at least 30 stream crossings, I think, and it was pretty wet in the woods, and I think my brake pads were just completely burned through and starting to seize metal on metal. So Janine told me I had to just send it on the descent and not touch the brake.
That's like my favorite part. And Diana's like, all right, here I go, you know.
And you're here today, so it worked out.
But I remember, wow.
Thankfully.
Like, because I don't know how, Diana, you were probably, this is what I imagine. I didn't get to ask you about this, right? So I don't know, was it like maybe 5 miles left to go when we hit pavement? And then we had to kind of go through town to get back to Horseshoe Canyon. And Janine had said, Diana's brakes are toast, you know? And I said, what? Sorry, what? You know, because there's these massive descents, right? And we've all talked about before, like, we're gonna have to check our brake pads after this. This is gonna be really interesting because they're probably all burned out. And so I just remember looking back and going like, how is she doing this, right? You know, because there, I mean, so how bad was it? Like, could you get any engagement whatsoever?
No, because they would just start seizing on and not release, which was even scarier.
So Diana's doing enduro next year. I mean,
and I love that we're like we gotta finish. And so I was like, Jen, you go in front, and I'm gonna just stay behind Diana. Like, what was I thinking? Like, that was gonna help. I'm like, well, I guess in case she crashes, I can see her.
I remember thinking that too, like, well, okay, I'll go in front. Like, maybe I'm the person blocking her going into something.
Yeah, you could be the buffer.
Run into me. That's okay. Like, by this point, I'm like, yeah, use me. I'll be fine. You know, like, whatever it takes is definitely a team effort. And you know, we rolled into Horseshoe Canyon, you know, all in one piece and kind of remarkably, I think, given the brake situation.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, almost no mechanicals. Aside from some chafing, sounds like your body's held up pretty well.
Yeah.
That is so impressive. Well, I have one last question, and then I have our final two that we ask every guest. I feel like we could have this conversation forever, and I think you three need to go have a download over a cup of coffee somewhere because you got stories. but I guess, you know, your perseverance on this was incredible. And so what advice do you have for how to keep going when you really just want to quit a ride? What would you tell folks?
Do it with friends. I mean, I think one of the things I thought a lot about on this trip was I'm not sure I'm built to do these sorts of things alone, even though I find it so fascinating that lots of people on this race, you know, were doing it solo. But, you know, I think it does help to have people around you, and everybody's different, you know, and I also think that, you know, if you're someone like me who has struggled with anxiety, the best thing you can do is prepare, you know, because then you have facts on the ground that say, here's what I've done that will make this safe, you know, and doable. So preparation and, you know, interdependence. This was a tremendous lesson from beginning to end. From when I started training, so many people helped me prepare for this race. I can't even tell you. So that's what I would say. This is not something that really you do alone.
Thank you. Janine or Diana, any sage words?
Yeah, it's interesting. My husband just passed on a podcast to me from Sam Harris, an episode about problem solving. And, you know, we are like, whoever thinks that you're just going to live, there's going to be a time where you're problem free. It's just not a thing. Like you problem solve. That's part of who we are as humans. You're constantly problem solving. And that's what these adventures are, is it's problem solving. But in the long run, it's awesome problem solving. You know, you're making it happen. You're out in these beautiful terrain. I mean, my mind parts were blown out there. Jen, how many times was I like, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm from the Tetons. I mean, like, that is gorgeous. And I was just blown away. So if you can really look at it as it's present, it's like you're present. It's not like with parenting, I'm not, you know, you're wondering if am I screwing up my child, or there's these things that, you know, can manifest. But when you're on adventures like this with cool women, you're just problem solving, but it's like, it's just present problem solving. It doesn't feel heavy.
Right.
Obviously if you get sick and you're hurting, yes, but you know, you have it in reach, you have a lifeline, you try to, you know, get help if you need it. So I think it's just trying to enjoy the moment, you know, be present and realize that it's the best kind of problem solving.
Mm, good advice. What about you, Diana? What would your advice be to folks? Things get really tough.
Yeah, I think for me, it's helpful, always helpful to just acknowledge that you're going to have a lot of highs and lows, both physically and mentally, and that's just going to be part of it. And so I think focusing on just the next mile or the next like aid station or the next rest stop, and kind of not overthinking beyond that, or just if it's a multi-day trip, just thinking like about the current day and breaking things down into kind of discrete goals is super helpful in terms of getting yourself to keep moving forward.
Yeah,
that's what I was focused on. You can tell I was in a lot more survival mode than maybe anyone else on this one.
No, you know that's not true.
You maybe didn't seem like
it. Janine was okay. I mean, or she didn't reveal it. But
I was digging deep. That's for sure.
I had some dark nights of the soul. Some of them in the middle of the day. So
I've never heard that before, but I like that expression, dark nights of the soul. Yeah. Well, you guys, congratulations on an absolutely epic adventure. Will you sign up for it again?
So on Sunday night, I said, this was lovely and this is amazing and I never need to do anything like this again. And within 24 hours, I was like, somebody tell me not to do this again, you know, like, but it's strangely addicting. If I did it again, I would prepare even more. I would have to take my experience to the next level in order to do it well. But I don't know. I'm curious. What do you two think?
I don't know. I would have to think about the bike. I would have to think about whether or not they're going to pull out some of that single track. I love single track. I love the rule of three. I would say if you are planning on riding Hazel Valley or doing the 100 or the 200 rule of three, go do Despair first, because mentally I feel like I am ready to take on the world.
Oh, yeah.
And all of that stuff does not even remotely feel scary. Obviously there's issues with weather or heat or mechanicals, but whew, it was, I would have to, I don't know if it's with you two ladies, I'd go do it. If you said, let's do it, I'll do it. Let's do it.
Okay.
What about you, Diana? Will you take it on again?
I think I'm still at a no.
That is fair. Well, I will say, you know, hearing you guys' adventures, and then I'm hosting a warm showers person who, are you guys familiar with warm showers?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's a website where traveling cyclists can stay with folks for free, essentially. So he stayed with me before the event, and now he's staying with me again. And then I have another friend, and just hearing their stories, it makes me want to sign up for it. But I don't know that I should, realistically, but we'll cross that bridge later. So
yeah, an incredible community, and I feel like I made so many new friends this weekend instantly. I mean, beyond the deepening, I think, of this friendship between the three of us, I just met all kinds of strangers that were instantly friends, and yeah, that's remarkable to me.
I think that's what I'm intrigued by. You know, the bike riding I haven't thought about, but hearing you guys talk about it, and I know how strong of riders all three of you are, would make me seriously. I would need to train a whole lot, which is fine. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending your afternoon. Make sure you rest, recover, and I can't wait to see more photos that come out.
Love all of you.
Thank you guys.
Bye.
This is an All Bodies on Bikes podcast powered by Feisty Media. The show is produced by Maggie and Marley and edited by the team at Feisty Media. Thanks for listening.